Hey, everyone. I'm Gary D'Amato, Journal Sentinel columnist with Matt Velasquez. Not with him, but we're Skyping, so we're in a sense together. Matt, how you doing?
I'm great. Welcome, everybody. It's been a little while since we've done a Bucks podcast, but we're hoping to, you know, fill that void right now and hopefully get one or two more in before Gary heads off to the Olympics pretty soon.
Yeah, that's right. February 6th, I'm taking off. Get in a day later, and then I'm hit the ground running for 20 some days. So that's going to be fun. But so let's talk about the Bucks. The big news, I guess, topical is that Giannis Antetokounmpo is the leading vote getter for the All-Star game for the Eastern Conference. And I don't know how you feel about it, Matt. I mean, I definitely expected him to be, you know, in the top three or four, but, to be ahead of LeBron James, who I think, in my opinion, is the best player in the world, I think is pretty interesting. How do you look at that?
Yeah, I mean, LeBron is basically, you know, the king of the Eastern Conference and the king of the NBA when it comes to voting, talent, ability, getting to the finals every year, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, with the way the voting's set up, you get to pick three guys in the front court and two guys in the back court. And, you know, Giannis and LeBron, I mean, I don't know who wouldn't put those guys into their starting front court in the East. I mean, just the way that they've started out the year, they're just obvious no-brainers. You know, so you knew that they would both get a lot of votes. Last year, Giannis was really close to LeBron in the All-Star voting, and buoyed by his fantastic start to the season, and everybody writing about his candidacy for MVP this year and his continued rise. I expected it would be at least close, but it is pretty interesting to see him at this first checkpoint ahead of LeBron. Giannis definitely has a fervent following both in Milwaukee and abroad. In basically every city that the Bucks have gone to, he brings out Greek flag-bearing fans and people. You know, I've seen people in T-shirts or jerseys from Greece of his. A couple teams have had Greek Heritage Nights when he's been in town. That's happened in Boston. It happened in Toronto. In Cleveland, they had a big group of Greek fans who serenaded him after the game. Similar thing happened in Toronto. So, you know, he definitely has that international following, and that definitely helps when it comes to getting all these votes. You know, I've seen a big outpouring on Twitter, because you can vote on Twitter, you can vote on, I mean, basically anything that can connect to the internet, you could probably vote on it, because they're doing it on Alexa, on Google devices. They're making it really easy and really fun for people to connect and to vote, and I've seen a ton of, you know, Greek fans getting out the vote and getting retweeted by the Bucks and things of that nature. So it'll be interesting to see, because, you know, we have, I think it's by midnight Eastern on January 15th when voting ends. So we'll, you know, we've got about 10 days until then, and we'll have to see, you know, how the fans respond, because you know that LeBron obviously also has his ardent fans, and he has a worldwide a base of people who follow him too. And, you know, some of them will take this as a slight that, you know, that King James is not number one when it's very obvious that he is in the middle of an MVP type season, especially with James Harden getting injured recently. I mean, right now you'd have to call LeBron the front runner for MVP. So, you know, those fans of LeBron's would say, hey, in the middle of an MVP season, that he's not the number one vote getter, that's something we won't stand for. And I'm sure that those fans will come out in droves, especially since this year the All-Star game has a new wrinkle where the leading vote getter in each conference will serve as a captain, and they'll pick among the players who are voted as starters, they'll pick, you know, their starting five, you know, basically like a playground style. And then when the reserves are selected by the coaches, they'll take turns and they'll pick their teams to fill out the roster. So the All-Star game won't be East versus West as it has been traditionally, as the NBA tries to spice things up. And it'll be really interesting to see, you know, who those captains are and who their picks are and how that works out, because, you know, the NBA is a league full of drama and you know, players feuding or, you know, becoming friends, going out on the banana boat, doing whatever. And, you know, this just adds a new layer of intrigue to All-Star Weekend, that's for sure.
One more All-Star question before we move on to the current state of the Bucks, Matt. And I'm curious if you've – I don't know if you've talked to Giannis about the All-Star game either last year or this year, but I'm curious how he's going to play – how he's going to approach this All-Star game. Last year, you know, it's such a glorified exhibition, or has been in recent years anyway. And, you know, guys laying down on the court and letting guys dunk over them and that kind of thing. And Giannis was the only guy who just approached it like it was a real game last year. And I don't know if some players pulled him aside and said, hey, Giannis, you know, come on, you know, don't make us look bad. We're all having fun out here. Do you think he attacks the game again this year, or do you think he backs off and just plays it off like most other guys do?
You know, I'm intrigued by that question as well. I haven't, you know, had a chance to talk to Giannis about it yet. Though I'm sure I will over the course of the next month and a half as we head towards the All-Star game and as we, you know, cement his status as an All-Star starter, which, you know, there's no reason that wouldn't happen. But, yeah, I'm not totally sure. I mean, on one hand, you know, he's a, you know, a highly competitive guy. You know, sometimes I think he struggles to kind of turn it off, that competitive nature. But then again, when you're dealing with the All-Stars in the NBA – they're all there because they're hyper-competitive guys, and they play hard. You know, and obviously during the All-Star game, he's gonna get some dunks, he's gonna do some fun things. Other players are gonna do the same, and I wonder if he'll tone it down a little bit and kind of like, you know, fit in with the rest of the crowd, or you know, if the rest of the crowd is going to basically join him. I mean, now that it's guys picking teams, and you know, it's not East versus West, and maybe there might be some more interpersonal dynamics, you know, in between these two teams. Maybe they might decide, you know, to kind of go harder as a unit and see it, you know, it's more, you know, hey, team, you know, Giannis or team LeBron or team Durant, team Curry, whoever it is, against, you know, somebody else. You know, maybe they might want to push a little bit harder and see what they can do. You know, maybe not the whole game. You know, you get the first three quarters through and you have fun and it's an exhibition. But then the fourth quarter, you know, turn it on and see who's better and man up. And, you know, that's what the NBA's hoping for. I know that. I mean, they want this thing to be both entertaining and competitive, and they want it to be a real basketball display. And, you know, it's an experiment on their part to see if this is the way to make that happen. And, you know, like I said, I'm intrigued just like everybody else to see if that'll actually be the case.
Yeah, I've been disappointed watching the All-Star game the last couple of years. I mean, I know what it's all about. I know the whole idea is to entertain and have fun, but you'd like to see some competitiveness. You'd like to see guys guarding each other a little bit instead of letting them, you know, doing the matador and just stepping aside and letting them go dunk. You know, obviously, no one wants to get hurt. There's a long season to go, and you don't expect guys to kill themselves on the court. But it'd be fun if they pretended to play some defense, and if they pretended to, you know, to go hard and be competitive. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. Let's move on to the Bucks as a team. You know, I watched the Minnesota game on television. They looked absolutely horrid in the first half. I don't think that's probably the worst I've seen a Bucks team look in a long, long time. They came back though, and since then they played really well, you know, DeMar DeRozan notwithstanding. And we talked about this a little bit, Matt, but have they turned a corner, or are there more corners to turn ahead? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that coming off that Chicago loss, and then being able to turn things around in the second half of that Minnesota game, I think it did represent at least a milestone, if not a turning point, you know, where they basically put their foot in the ground and said, all right, we're going to turn this up. We're not going to, you know, let this slide anymore. And that was an important moment for them, you know, having lost without Giannis to Charlotte and then kind of getting embarrassed at home against the Bulls. And they needed to, you know, pull things together and get things going in the right direction and to, follow that up with the win that they had in Oklahoma City, where, you know, definitely aided by the inability to review that play at the end, where Giannis definitely stepped out of bounds.
Yes, he did.
You know, that, you know, but still, like, they knocked off two of the better teams in the Western Conference on back-to-back days, you know, one after being down by 20 in the second half, and then the other, you know, on the road with the, you know, reigning MVP. Granted, they didn't have Paul George, you know, but they still, you know, are a formidable team without Paul George. And they were able to claim that win. And then those two games together, I mean, yeah, they were big. I mean, you know, in giving that team renewed confidence and again proving that when they bring their A game or at least their A-minus game for most of the night or even parts of the night, they can be a really formidable team and they can hang with anybody and beat anybody. You know, and then they did that again. They brought everything they had against the Raptors, you know, in a venue where the Raptors had one loss at the Air Canada Center, and you know the Bucks had chances to win in regulation, and then ultimately fell in overtime when DeMar DeRozan went absolutely crazy and scored 52 points, and just basically, you know, took everything the Bucks defense threw at him, you know, one-on-one situations, traps, blitzes, double teams. You name it, and you know he just kept making tough shots and executing at a high level and just I don't know if there's anything more that any team could have done, you know, when a guy's in the zone like that. You know, I'm sure there are things. I'm sure people say, oh yeah, well, he could have done this, that, and the other thing, but man, he was playing so well and making so many tough shots that you just kind of have to tip your cap and be like, all right, well, let's hope that doesn't happen again when they come back to town Friday. So. You know, but I mentioned to you that, you know, the Bucks are an up and down team, you know, much to the chagrin of members of the fan base for sure. And much to the chagrin of members of the team and the front office and the coaching staff, they don't want to be up and down. You know, they want to be all the way up. But you know, they're still working out some of the kinks. They're still trying to figure out exactly what they need to do and how to do it on a day-to-day basis and how to win. And how to deal with the rigors of the regular season. You know, but there's going to be, you know, they turned a corner now, but there's going to be more corners to turn. I mean, they're either working within a square or a rectangle, whatever you want to say, because they're going to be turning corners more often, you know, as the season goes on. There's going to be, you know, quality wins and winning streaks, and there's going to be, you know, a couple games in a row where they just don't have it and things aren't working right, and then they have to, you know, wake up and turn the corner again. And so, you know, the important thing is to, you know, stretch out those win streaks. They've done that a little bit this season, but they haven't, you know, gotten them to really big numbers yet. But if they can stretch out some win streaks, you know, keep the losses to one or two in a row, you know, and kind of build on what they've been, the way they've been playing recently, I mean, they'll be in a good position. And right now they're not in a terrible position. You know, we're 36 games into the season, at least for the Bucks, and they're 20-16. They're fifth in the East, and the four teams ahead of them. I mean, if you talked about this before the season started, and you said who are the four teams that could be ahead of the Bucks, you'd point to Boston, Toronto, Cleveland, and Washington, and that's who it is. You know, and so you know, the Bucks are kind of slotted in where you thought they might be. And, you know, the tests will continue to come. I mean, right now they're getting ready for their second game in 4 days against the Raptors tonight, you know, Friday night. And then they'll head straight over to Washington for a game against the Wizards on Saturday, the first meeting with them this season. So we'll get to see how the Bucks stack up against those top four teams really quickly as they take on Toronto and Washington today before a week in which they, you know, then they'll take on Indiana, Orlando and Golden State next week, which should be another shift test.
Well, I'm betting on one thing, and that's that DeRozan's not going to go off for 52 again. But having said that, you know, he seems to really turn it up against the Bucks. I'll bet he's averaging probably 36 to 40 points against the Bucks over his career on that 52 point game the other night. But we'll have to wait and see how they handle him, whether Liggins gets off the bench and maybe guards them a little bit or what they do different this game that they didn't do last game. But one thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, we talked about just now how they're playing better. They seem to have turned a little corner. They've beaten some pretty good teams. And I wonder how much of a coincidence it is that Matthew Dellavedova is back, because No, I covered him in the Olympic Games in Rio, and I think I saw him play 3 or 4 games. I wrote a column about him saying how Bucks fans were going to like this guy. And I got caught some heat for it because a lot of people think he's not much of an athlete. But he just does smart things with the ball, and his assist to he was one of the best players in the Olympic tournament. His assist to turnover ratio was something like – it was crazy. It was very similar to what it's been the last 3 or 4 games with the Bucks. So what kind of impact does he have? What does he do for the Bucks? What can he do for them that they don't have when he's been hurt and not playing? What is his impact?
Yeah, I mean, he like you mentioned, he just has such a high basketball IQ. He knows where guys need to be and when. He knows how to read defenses and figure out the best situation to put guys in. And that's what he's been doing, you know, since coming back from injury. And I think he had a little bit of a slow lead up where he was on a minutes restriction. But since then, I mean, over the past 3 games, he's had 28 assists and 2 turnovers.
It's crazy.
You know,
yeah.
Which is just fantastic. And, you know, really just that's what guys keep saying. I kept asking different guys in the locker room what it was about him. And some of the guys I just asked, hey, you know, what is it about the lineup where, you know, they put out 3 point guards where they had Bledsoe, Dellavedova, and Brogdon all playing together. And I would ask them about, you know, different players about that lineup, and they'd all gravitate towards what Deli brings. They're like, oh, well, Deli, he gets us in the right spots, and he, you know, gets guys open. He knows where they need to be. He knows what the defense is doing. He knows kind of how to pick apart defenses and when is the right time for a drive and kick and to whom, or when is the right time for him to go for the floater. And he's really made a connection with Malcolm Brogdon. They've been running a set where, you know, Malcolm comes off, you know, usually comes off a screen, a middle screen, and Deli throws it up for an alley-oop for him. And those don't always finish in, and they don't usually finish in dunks, but Brogdon goes up and gets it near the rim and just pops it in for 2. And
yeah,
and some of those, you know, they don't connect on some of those. They're not always perfect in their execution. But it's a play that, you know, they've gone to a bunch of times and it has worked. And teams aren't used to, you know, a point guard or shooting guard combo guard guy like Brogdon going up for an alley-oop like that. I mean, that's not usually something you prepare for. And maybe they will now that they've seen it a couple times out of that set that the Bucks have continually gone to. But Deli just, you know, it's positive. And Jason Kidd said, I believe it was yesterday, I was talking to him, and he said that, you know, one thing about Deli being on the court is all 4 other guys believe that they can score or believe they'll get the ball when Deli's on the court, which is important. I mean, you know, when guys are getting the ball, I mean, it's a common thing that people talk about in the NBA. When guys are getting the ball, they're engaged. And when they're engaged on offense, you know, they tend to be more engaged on defense because you're happy. Like you feel like you're contributing and you want to kind of roll that over to the other end because you're totally in it. And so, you know, and Deli's been positive, just generally speaking, on the defensive end. I don't know what the on-off stats are for him, but just in the sense that he's constantly communicating, constantly talking, and, you know, that's a big part of playing team defense is everyone knowing where they need to be and having the communication on what you're going to do in a pick and roll or, you know, who's switching or anything like that. And I know that Kidd also mentioned that he's, you know, noticed Deli and Jason Terry, 2 veteran guys on the bench, just always be engaged. Deli's always talking there, calling out defenses, you know, calling out what he's seeing. You know, like depending on who is in front of the Bucks bench at the time, if they're on offense, he might be calling certain things or saying certain things. And if they're on defense, he'll call out, you know, kind of where action is going and, you know, try and help in some way. And I know that Thon Maker recently said that, you know, just Deli's preparedness and the way that he keeps loose and things like that on the bench, that affects him and that impacts him and helps him. So just in general, just Deli's been a positive presence since coming back from his injury. He's also, you know, shooting the 3-pointer, you know, reasonably well. I'm just looking at the stats now. So, you know, he's at, 46.7% from 3 in the 8 games since he's been back from injury on basically 2 attempts per game. Over the past 2, he's 4 of 6, So that's, you know, always a positive to see. You know, he's just good at picking his spots for when he needs to shoot versus when he needs to pass and facilitate, and the Bucks are better for it.
Yeah, you know, I think people see him, the way he brings the ball up the court, kind of walks it up and then turns his back to the defender and backs him down. It looks like something a high school player might do. I mean, it doesn't look athletic. It doesn't look dynamic, but he gets in a position to get the ball to the right player. And that's what you want out of a guy who comes off your bench and handles the ball. So, you know, I've always been big on him. He's a glue player. He's not going to be a 20 point, you know, 10 assist guy, but he's important, I think, to what the Bucks do. So let's move on to a guy we haven't talked about much, because we haven't seen him much, but you've been talking to him a little bit, Jabari Parker. We're getting pretty close to his return, I guess. Do you have a feel for that? And also, what that could do? I mean, that could dynamically change how the Bucks play and what they do when he steps back onto the court. So what's the latest on Jabari?
Yeah, so I was at practice yesterday on Thursday, and, you know, he was, you know, playing Church League, which is, you know, they get guys who haven't played as much or don't get as many minutes, and those guys generally play, and they'll play, you know, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 5-on-5 scrimmages. Yesterday they were going 5-on-5 for a little while. Eric Bledsoe was taking part in that too. Thon Maker was out there, and then it was kind of the usual suspects with, you know, Sterling Brown, Rashad Vaughn, Jason Terry, Joel Bolomboy, Sean Kilpatrick, you know, guys like that. They were all out there, you know, playing. And Jabari, you know, as I've said for months, I mean, going back to September, he's looked great. I mean, he's looked like he can do everything that you expect him to do. You know, there were plays where he was, you know, with or without the ball, coming off screens, making hard cuts, you know, really confident in his knee and his abilities. A couple plays where he got, you know, I remember one play he made a backdoor cut and he got hit with the pass and caught it at the edge of the paint and immediately popped up for a dunk. You know, the kind of things like that you would expect from him. And actually afterwards, you know, because I don't know exactly how he's feeling, you know, because you can see what he's doing, but you don't know how he's feeling about it. So I just kind of asked him, you know, how close do you feel to being able to do everything you used to be able to do? And he just kind of smiled. He goes, "You saw, you know." And I was like, "All right, Jabari, all right, I understand." You know, but then when I asked him about, like, well, how is he actually feeling? You know, is there lingering pain? Is there anything like that? And he was like, "Oh, well, you know, I've got a little more time. I've got to get a little more time on the court. You know, got to build my strength and conditioning, kind of stuff like that." He's like, "Yeah, but time heals wounds. I'll be fine." So, you know, he's been doing that work with Church League. You know, basically every other day when the Bucks have practice, he'll get out there and he'll play with those guys. He hasn't been able to practice kind of with the main group very much, just because, you know, on practice days they're not going as hard as he wants to go, or he, you know, as hard as his rehab would call for. You know, because a bunch of those guys, you know, you talk about Giannis and Chris and, you know, Malcolm and Henson, all those guys, Tony Snell, I mean, they've been playing big minutes, and you don't want to wear them out, you know, in practice ahead of a game, you know, the coming day. So he hasn't been able to get with that group yet, but he's been working on his conditioning. He points to the conditioning is kind of the last thing that's left, you know, and that, you know, as he grows in strength and conditioning, that, you know, the only way he can find out where he is by playing, and that's a whole different animal than just lifting weights or running or even scrimmaging to that point. And I asked him, I said, "Hey, you know, we're, you know, in January now. February is the month that the team has been saying, and he has been saying for months, that it's going to be his targeted return time." And I was like, "Well, now that we're getting closer, you know, do you know or have any idea if it's going to be early February, similar to the time when he got hurt, you know, February 8th last year, or is it going to be like a year to the day after he got his surgery, which I believe was Valentine's Day, or, you know, a day or two around that, or is it going to be after the All-Star break, which means he wouldn't start playing until February 23rd? And he said he's still not sure. He said it's out of his control. He just kind of continues to, you know, let them know where he's at. They tell him what he needs to do. And, you know, it's up to the team, and he says he has no problem with that. So for now, it's just continuing to work out with the Wisconsin herd, work out, you know, with some of the Bucks bench guys and get some run there. Jason Kidd and the coaching staff and sometimes GM John Horst and other Bucks staffers are, you know, around the court watching those games. They're paying attention. They're seeing what he can do and how he feels. And all they can do is kind of take it from there.
Who ultimately clears him to play? I mean, ultimately, it's got to be a doctor who's a Bucks team physician or somebody, an orthopedic guy, or somebody who signs off and says, yeah, he's ready. Because, like you said, I mean, he looks good. I've seen him in practice a couple of times. He looks great. I saw him practicing way back before the Bucks practice facility even opened. I had a tour, and he was in there practicing and looked good. So, you know, he probably thinks he's ready to play. So how is that clear? Who makes that clearance and who decides, okay, today's the day you can play in the game again now?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be a group decision, I think, by the Bucks training staff. You know, Jason Kidd has always kind of said, hey, you know what, the doctors, when they tell me guys can play, that's when they can go. When they're ready to go, like, then I can use them. So I think it'll be a group decision among the people in the training staff, their medical staff, as they continue to monitor him. But it's been February's been the case, like I said, for months, that everyone knew the plan. Everyone was on the same page, from the medical staff to Jabari to the coaching staff to the front office. They all knew what this plan was. It's this, you know, a similar timeline, or basically the same timeline possibly as his first time tearing that ACL. And he said months ago that he felt like he was ahead of schedule, in that, you know, comparing it to the first time he tore, just because he knew what it was all about, and he, you know, was better at dealing with the rehab process. But at the same time, he wasn't planning to come back any earlier. You know, just because he was feeling better or, you know, progressing better didn't mean that was necessarily a reason to change the plan or rush the return. You know, because this is a long term, you know, proposition for everyone. I mean, Jabari wants to be healthy for the long term. The Bucks want him to be healthy for the long term, and so it is in everyone's best interest to be conservative and make sure that, you know, they're only putting him out there, and he's only going out there when he is at the absolute best position he can be in to get back to playing shape. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see when and how he gets back and how he fits. You know, how he fits back in, you know, because he's, you know, he's a dynamic scorer and, you know, an elite athlete. And, you know, the Bucks could definitely use someone like that and be able to, you know, either fit into the starting lineup or come off the bench, however they decide to use him. I mean, at the end of the day, whatever number, you know, his 20, 25, 30, whatever number of minutes per game that he can give is, you know, he's going to be able to give those. And it'll be better than basically anybody who's coming off the bench now for the Bucks, just that, you know, just from what he can bring and what he's shown in the past. Because I was talking to Chris Middleton about it yesterday, just watching Jabari, and he was like, "Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, we thought he was an all-star last year before he got hurt, and you know, we're excited to see what he can bring when he gets back." And you know, when you can bring back a guy who, you know, is regarded by his teammates as an all-star caliber player, I mean, that there's no one else on the bench who's at that level right now. And so it'll definitely be interesting to see how the Bucks approach him and his return and how he could possibly fit back with the team.
I can't wait. I mean, it could be a dynamic change in the team. So, you know, some players' minutes are going to probably suffer a little bit for the better of the team, but you're right. There's nobody who does on the bench anyway, who does the things that Jabari can bring to the team. What have we missed, Matt? Any topic we missed that you want to talk about?
I mean, there's one thing that I'm interested in is, you know, I'm still trying to figure out exactly how things are going to go for the Bucks this week in regards to DeAndre Liggins. He's still on a non-guaranteed contract, and if they do not want to pay that full season contract of his, they're going to need to make a decision on him this week. I believe January 7th is the date that they would need to release him by if they didn't want his his contract to become guaranteed, because I believe the January 10th is the day that contracts become guaranteed, and so players need to be cut with enough time that they can clear waivers before that deadline. And so, you know, Liggins has been pretty interesting. He's gotten some decent run throughout the season. It's kind of tapered off recently. There's no question that he plays with high energy and effort, two favorite buzzwords of Jason Kidd. But there's no question he brings those things when he's on the court. But the issue is that sometimes that's not always played in the right way. I'm trying to think of the perfect word for it. During a recent game where he just kept collecting fouls and wasn't really honing his aggression, I likened him to a wacky inflatable arm flailing tube man. teams know that he's going to bring that crazy aggression. And if you just, I think it was the Bulls game where Nikola Mirotic was standing out at the perimeter and Liggins was on him, and Mirotic kind of just played keep away, held the ball up and waited for Liggins to come at him and just start throwing limbs. And he got a foul. And it was something that we could kind of see coming. You know that Liggins is going to, if you wait long enough, he's just going to come at you. And sometimes that hustle is rewarded with steals and deflections and blocks and just kind of, you know, really, you know, great defensive plays. But, you know, some of those great defensive plays, like the steals, they turn into fast breaks. And DeAndre Liggins on a fast break, while a sight to behold, is not not necessarily the most efficient offense. And then there's also the play, you know, the times where he gets into foul trouble and all that. And I know that in looking at the advanced stats, you know, when Liggins is on the court, the defense isn't that much better than when he's off the court. It may even be worse. I haven't checked the most recent numbers. But the offense, the Bucks offense just falls off a cliff because he's not an offensive player. For a time this season, Jason Kidd was talking about just trying to get him to look at the basket. But when he's out there, you know, the Bucks are 5-on-4. Teams don't respect his shot. They don't respect his scoring ability. They clog the lane. They make things harder for Giannis Antetokounmpo. And, you know, that's not really the type of player who necessarily, you know, will fit the Bucks best moving forward, I don't think. You know, but they have to make the decision this week as to whether or not they want him to be part of their team for the rest of the season, or they want to open up that roster spot for somebody else. And, you know, kind of that opens another can of worms of, if you're going to open that roster spot, who are you going to give it to? You know, they have the options of staying within themselves and, you know, giving that open roster spot to one of their two-way players. I know that, you know, Joel Ballenboy is probably getting pretty close to, exhausting all 45 of his days available as part of his two-way contract. And there's no reason that he couldn't just stay with the Wisconsin Herd and they could hold on to him because, as long as he's on a two-way contract and with the Herd, no other team can poach him off that roster. Recently, as of last night, I saw a report that James Young of the Wisconsin Herd was going to be signed to a two-way contract by the Philadelphia 76ers. And there's no stopping a team from doing that. The Bucks could poach anybody from any other G League team who's not on a two-way, and any other team could poach a guy from the Herd who's not on a two-way. So they could theoretically either bring up Ballenboy to bolster their front court, or leave him with the Herd and maintain his rights and keep any team from signing him. Or they could bring up Sean Kilpatrick, who they recently signed off waivers. I think it was off waivers, he might have been a free agent. Either one, they signed him after the Brooklyn Nets got rid of him to make room in the Jahlil Okafor trade. And they put him on a two-way, and he had been a pretty solid bench scorer for the Nets and was coming into his own. He had a reputation of being able to get buckets and help a bench unit, and he's done that already multiple times for the Bucks. And you wonder, I mean, he hasn't spent any time with the Wisconsin Herd. I mean, I don't even know if he's been to Oshkosh yet, as part of that two-way. And you wonder if the Bucks kind of brought him in with the expectation of auditioning him, seeing what he can do, and then around this time, possibly replacing Liggins with Kilpatrick, and then filling a new two-way spot, or filling his spot, because I think the deadline for adding a two-way player is January 10th, so this all kind of fits together. So if the Bucks are going to elevate one of their two-way guys, which I would lean towards, you know, if they cut Liggins, I would lean towards Kilpatrick being the guy. That would be my guess. I don't have any inside knowledge. That's just my guess. And then they would still have time to fill that remaining two-way spot. And then you wonder if they elevate a guy who's already with the herd to a two-way, possibly a Xavier Munford type player, or if they look around the NBA, you know, see who's around and available and then go from there. And there's also the chance that they don't elevate either of their two-way guys and they grab a free agent, and add that person to replace Liggins. So there's a lot of options. I think it'll all come to a head over this coming weekend as we figure out what direction they want to go.
Just to go back a couple of minutes, so you were talking about Liggins, and I think you coined a new NBA phrase, throwing limbs. I love that. That's very descriptive. And I'm going to say that we're going to have to agree to disagree. We talked about this before we started the this podcast. I think the Bucks should have put him on DeRozan the other night because they, like you said, they tried everything else and nothing worked. And Liggins was on the bench, never got off the bench. It wouldn't have hurt, I don't think, to put him on him for 7 or 8 minutes and see if he could slow him down. We might agree to disagree on that. But anyway, Matt, I know you wanted to be done by 11. So do you want to sign us out?
Yeah, I think that's it. I hope we covered a bunch of ground and gave people some insight on what's going on. And like I said, hopefully we can get one or two of these in the bag before Gary heads out to Asia. So thanks, everybody, for joining us for the latest edition of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. As always, you can find our work at jsonline.com, and you can find the podcast basically anywhere you get podcasts, either Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, any of those places. And make sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode.